How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 13th Lucky 13 Rain and Jay's podcast with me, John Corrales, and him, Jay King, on the other side. We are coming to you after a couple of really disappointing, shall I say, disgusting losses to the Detroit Pistons and last night to the Chicago Bulls. And it's not, Jay, it's not that they lost, because losses to the Pistons and the Bulls, not unexpected. They're two good teams. It's how they lost. It's the fact that they had leads and looked good for stretches in those games. And then all of a sudden, especially in the second half of those games, looked so terrible. I don't understand how you could go from looking so good to so bad in a single game.
Yeah, their offense has been so bad lately. And like you were talking, the Chicago game, they're up 10 in the second quarter, and then Mirotić gets open for two long balls, and Butler hits that running one-legged jumper and one from outside the key or near the top of the key, and then all of a sudden, like, that 10-point lead is gone. If you blinked, it was gone. If you took a bathroom break, it was gone. You came back, and the Celtics were down. And then third quarters have been so rough to them lately. But it really all does come back to shooting. It's so hard to play 48 minutes of good basketball when for the last eight games you are shooting 24% from behind the arc. That is almost impossible. John, you and I could go out there, and if we were the only ones taking threes, we might be around 24%. And meanwhile, this is an NBA team.
Wait, you might be around 24%.
Well, I'd be chucking. But it's unreal how bleak their 3-point shooting has been. Just atrocious lately. And that's been the biggest issue. To me, you know, they've lost 4 out of 5. The one game where they didn't bring their defensive intensity, I thought, was Los Angeles, the Lakers game. Other than that, they've been stopping people. They just cannot whatsoever shoot the ball right now. And part of that is Avery Bradley being out. Part of it is Isaiah Thomas slumping. He sprained his wrist, or he sprained his thumb, rather, on his shooting hand recently. So who knows how much that's affecting him. But this is it hasn't been a good stretch for the Celtics offense.
Well, Isaiah Thomas, the past two games, 11 for 37 versus Chicago and Detroit, 5 for 17 versus Chicago, 6 for 20 against Detroit. And the Detroit game, I think he was 1 for 14 at some point.
1 for 15.
1 for 15. So then he hit his next 5 for 5 down that stretch in the fourth quarter, which shows how quickly he can catch fire. But 1 for 15 before finishing 6 of 20. So even that 6 of 20 seems a little bit inflated, because this doesn't show how bad he was for the first, you know, 3.5 quarters of the game. Still, when Isaiah Thomas, we've talked about it. The offense with Isaiah Thomas on the floor is so much better than with him off the floor. But when he's on the floor and shooting 11 of 37, that then what? Then what? Without Avery Bradley, we'll get to Avery Bradley in a minute. You have to make do, and that's fine. But when the one guy you're counting on hits a slump like that, and every player goes through a slump, then you're screwed when you're the Boston Celtics, because no one else, that aside from Jay Crowder, is stepping up. It's hard for anybody else. It's hard for them to run any sort of offense. They're really not getting to the basket. They're playing. They're a jump shooting team that can't hit jumpers, and that's a problem. They really, I think, need to find ways to create some offense getting to the basket. But that's been a constant problem. They don't take a lot of free throws. They're not aggressive. They're not a driving team, aside from a couple of guys. So I don't know what the solution is other than getting Avery Bradley back on the floor, which he might be on Sunday.
And the worse they shoot, the more it compounds those other problems. Because if you're shooting 24% from behind the arc, teams don't have to guard you. They don't, like, all of a sudden those drives to the lane become tougher. There are a few drives Isaiah Thomas had, especially in the Detroit game, I thought. They didn't even bother to pretend guarding Evan Turner at the arc. Obviously, Evan Turner shot around 15% from deep for the season. They didn't even bother. Like, I think Evan Turner being in the starting lineup has hurt Isaiah Thomas, because those drives where maybe there was space before, not so much anymore. Kelly Olynyk does provide space. That new starting lineup with Kelly Olynyk, it's been so weird, because last three first quarters, they look like unreal, unstoppable. Olynyk's hitting threes, and they're getting to the hoop, and everything looks gravy. And then third quarter comes, same five guys against the same five opponents, and it's like complete night and day.
It doesn't make any sense.
They can't sustain any type of offense right now, and that's been their issue. That's going to be their issue all year, is whether they can sustain offense. And right now, with Bradley out, Thomas slumping, Marcus Smart struggling to find himself after the injury, it's been a rough, rough, rough stretch.
I will say, Celtics blog did a nice piece today comparing Avery Bradley on the floor versus off the floor. And really the only player that doesn't have a significantly higher offensive rating with Bradley on the floor is Amir Johnson, weirdly.
Yeah, just the random outlier, Amir.
It's unbelievable, because everyone else, and I'm looking at the numbers, it's significant. Their offensive rating is at least 5 or 6 points higher, in some cases 10 points higher. In Jonas Jerebko's case, it's 17 points higher. So it's, I mean, some of those numbers might be a little skewed because it's Isaiah, it's Avery Bradley playing with Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, the Isaiah effect is real. Yeah.
They also have similar effects, but Isaiah Thomas, offensive rating with Avery Bradley is 107.4 versus 99 without him. So that shows you something. So Avery Bradley is missed on both ends of the floor, and I think really part of his offensive impact is the ability for him to guard somebody and get the steals and create that fast break opportunity that we would have loved to have seen him out there against the Pistons. And I'm so sick of Caldwell Pope destroying the Boston Celtics. And he's been playing a lot better lately overall, so it's not like he's a scrub that's just feasting on Boston. But, man, I still would like to at least contain him a little bit more. It would have been nice to have his defense out there. So I think Avery Bradley coming back and Marcus Smart getting up to full speed and everybody being healthy, if we can sustain that, would make a difference in the offense getting better. You know how it goes, Jay. You go out there and you get that floor spacing and you get to the rim without getting destroyed, first of all, and ending up on your ass. But you get to the rim, you get a couple of layups, you feel good about yourself, and you're shooting with that just a little bit more confidence. And it sounds cliche to say you just need to see the ball go in, but it's true. When you're out there and struggling as a shooter, and you can get a few easy baskets and you can just score a couple of points, you just get that thing inside of you. When you shoot with confidence, your form gets better, your release is crisper, everything just happens more crisply, and those shots start to fall. You know that, and I think when everybody's together and you get that the band back together, that could have a positive effect on the Celtics offense.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about Avery Bradley and how important he's been. And it's not just that he's a good player, which he is, and it's not just that he's grown as an offensive player, which he has. It's that there's just nobody else on the wing who's even close to a knockdown shooter or someone who can come off screens and hit shots like he does. You know, Crowder's become a lot better shooter, but he's like mostly spot up. Isaiah Thomas, guys live with him when he pulls up for three. That's okay. They don't really mind. There is nobody else on the team that can really come off screens and get a pretty good shot. And that's what Avery Bradley does for this team. So they miss that. And it's not just that he's really good, not just that he's a good player, but that they don't have that elsewhere on the roster. And they need that. They need shooting. They need more dynamic playmaking. They need it. It's painfully clear that they need that. And I mean, the offense is just so hard to watch sometimes. Even when they have good ball movement, even when they get good shots, they just, it's tough. They're just scratching by. Last year there were times when everything flowed, and it was more like with the small lineups, when it was Crowder and Jarebko and Thomas and those bench lineups that just sometimes just rained down threes. And I don't know whether they need to go to that more often. It's been tough because they've never known, like, either Bradley or Smart has been out almost the entire season. They haven't really had their full complement of backcourt depth yet. They're trying to go small more often. David Lee is getting DMPs.
Yes.
But it's like they need to do something to juice this offense, because right now they're like just lost. And it's become a thing where it's like it just gets worse and worse almost every game. We talked about this last week. We were talking about how they were settling for jumpers and missing too many jumpers and needed to get to the hoop, needed to get more free throws, easy buckets.
It's a constant thing.
A week later, it's worse. And and they need to bounce back. And to be fair, they've played some pretty good defensive teams. Chicago is, with the exception of San Antonio, as good as anyone defensively. So that's a tough team to score against. But I mean, they had pretty good shots, and they get pretty good shots. It's just,
they just hit them.
They just cannot knock them down. And then once they start getting in a hole, then guys start going one on one, and this is not a one on one team. I thought I saw that especially against Chicago. It was like guys started to force the issue once the offense was stalled for a while, and they can't have that because they don't have that type of player that can go get buckets like that. They don't have, you know, the Jimmy Butler that Chicago has, or any of the league's great scorers. They don't have that, with the exception of Isaiah some nights and not right now.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that gets to the mentality. And, you know, I have these Twitter arguments once in a while. The mentality is a problem for this team that I really still think that these guys sometimes think they're better than they are. And it's hard because everybody in the league has an ego, but you can't go one-on-one on this team. Even Isaiah Thomas can't go one-on-one all the time, because if the other guys on the team aren't knocking down their shots, which they can't, it's so much easier to help off of those guys. So Isaiah Thomas can't go one-on-one when there's no space. That's the difference between him and the elite scorers out there, that the elite scorers can do that without the space and find that sliver and get to the rim anyway, where Isaiah Thomas really starts to struggle when you can collapse on him because he has to throw up these crazy rainbow. There was a shot against in that Chicago game where he tried to throw it. I think it was a Chicago game. Maybe it was Detroit. But regardless, he threw the ball so high where he had to try to get it up over the defender, and it was like almost at the top of the backboard, before it came down. It's just harder for him to do what he does best in this situation. So it's so weird, by the way, that we're sitting here talking about missing Avery Bradley's offense. That was inconceivable in last season, even. Last season, his offense wasn't as good as it is this year. Last season, it started to come around. But the fact that we're talking about how much Avery Bradley's offense impacts the Celtics team is amazing to me. I just want to throw that out there.
And it's amazing on multiple levels. One, because he's come so long from that rookie who bricked everything.
Everything.
I mean, the backboard was in serious danger whenever he lined up a jumper as a rookie. The other level is that Avery Bradley isn't a good enough offensive player where he should be missed this much. But because it's the Celtics and because they don't have much scoring talent, he is. And they don't have much to replace him. And they need guys to step up. They need Marcus Smart to start hitting shots. They need Evan Turner to stop shooting shots. And there are just times like Sullinger shoots long twos like 8 seconds into a shot clock, or Turner launches a three with like 14 seconds left. And I understand that they don't want those guys to be complete non-threats when they catch the ball. But when you're taking one of the least efficient shots you can find that early in the shot clock without trying to get a better shot, that's not good offense. And they can't have those moments. They can't afford those moments. One thing I've noticed from the second unit is that this was especially in the Detroit game. When Smart and Sullinger were on the court together in the second unit and running pick and rolls and stuff, that was almost destined to take a bad shot. It was either Smart was going to pull up for a long two, or Sullinger was going to space out and shoot a long two himself. Those aren't good shots. And the bench hasn't looked good since they made the shakeup to put Kelly Olynyk in the starting lineup.
Yeah, well, because the only – who do you have that can score on the bench now? And it made worse that at least Evan Turner in the second unit, running the second unit, makes a little more sense. Evan Turner as a starter is no good. It's no good. And I don't see – I don't see why Evan Turner would even think about taking a three at this point. And I can't. I don't want to repeat myself from last week because I said the exact same thing last week. But I just can't fathom why. And of course, he hit one between then and now. I think he only hit one. But I just can't fathom why. I forget who it was that tweeted it yesterday, but the point was that for all of the Evan Turner threes that he's taken, they have resulted on average in half a point per shot. That's pretty bad.
just pretty bad.
That's so horrible. I can't even find the words to express how taking a three results in half a point on average per attempt. I gotta stop because my head is gonna explode. It's like scanners. My head is just gonna blow up across my laptop. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't know. Let's move on.
That's where the Celtics offense is right now, though.
That's terrible.
It is going to make your head explode across your laptop.
And the thing is, they can't. I had these conversations so often. The Celtics have no choice but to play him because they need him. They need him to be out there because when he's good, he's really good. But when he's bad, he's so bad that I don't know. But they look, at least the Celtics have benched David Lee.
And it didn't help. I thought that would help a lot. And I thought there would be immediate payoff from that. I thought the moment he started getting DMPs, their bench would look a lot better. Instead,
but
the crap.
The DMPs. Yeah, the DMPs have also coincided with Olynyk going to the starting lineup,
and Bradley being out.
So there are multiple things at play.
And Isaiah struggling, which he rarely does.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when they can get that full complement out there and have Smart, Bradley, Isaiah Thomas at their disposal at full strength. One of those guys is going to go to the bench, and that's going to immediately help the bench. And maybe, I don't know, one of the questions is Isaiah Thomas at 32 minutes per game versus Isaiah Thomas at 26 minutes per game. Is he playing too many minutes? Is that something that, because coming into the season and all through the offseason, Danny Ainge was saying, Isaiah Thomas expends so much energy to score that we don't want to burn him out. We don't want to ruin what he does well by putting him out there too much. And now he's starting and playing these 32 minutes a game. I don't know what the sample size is. I don't know if it's enough to say that the minutes are having an effect. Maybe the spraining of the thumb is just a random thing, but he's also taking a lot more punishment. When everybody's healthy, do you have that conversation again that Isaiah Thomas might be better off coming off of the bench? And since Avery Bradley's so good as a scorer, he can help that first unit. Or do you have that Avery Bradley goes to the bench because he's such a good scorer and a good defender that he really bolsters both ends of that second unit? I don't know how that goes, but somehow one of those guys is going to help the second unit, and that's going to be a big difference. So I like that David Lee is sitting, obviously. I like that Olynyk is starting. I think he can be really good. We just need these other couple of things to kind of catch up, and then we can start to see, once everybody's in place, what will happen.
Yeah, and to the point of Isaiah playing more minutes, that's not by design. They don't want to play him more minutes than they played him last year. It's just they haven't had either Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley almost every game, and they don't have enough backcourt depth where they can throw out somebody else. You know, these last couple of games against the Bulls, their rotation was almost like seven guys. It was like the starting five, Sullinger, Tyler Zeller, and then like spot minutes for Jarebko and James Young. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have confidence to play more wing guys, that's when Isaiah Thomas's minutes go up, and that's when Evan Turner's minutes go up. And I don't know. I mean, 32 minutes, a lot of guys across the league play 32 minutes per game. There aren't a lot of guys who have the ball in their hands as much as Isaiah Thomas does, and there aren't a lot of guys who need to expend so much energy to get decent shot opportunities because he's 5'9", because every team tries to guard him with length, and he needs to really, really work for those shots. He takes a pounding at the hoop. I don't know whether he's getting worn down, but he hasn't been as efficient as he was last year. It might be partially he's not playing with as many small lineups. It might be partially their shooting has been really bad, but it was bad last year too. And it's just they need to find that second score. They need, and it's not right now, it's not on the roster. You know, there's hope that Marcus Smart can develop into it one day. He's not even close right now. There's hope, you know, James Young and RJ Hunter will space the floor in the future. They're not doing it right now. They're not playing many minutes. So they need more shooting. They need more playmaking. And right now, too much falls on Isaiah Thomas' shoulders.
Well, let's use this opportunity to go to the next topic here, because Danny Ainge on the radio Thursday made the comment that has gotten Twitter buzzing. So first, here's the quote. He was asked about making trades in the future, and he says, quote, consolidating quantity for quality right now is sort of something that we're looking to do. But we like all of our players. We don't have to do anything by the trade deadline, but we're certainly busy trying to find something to upgrade our team. So that basically says to everybody, sends the signal out there that we're looking to move some guys, and they're looking to do the 2-for-1, 3-for-1, 3-for-2 deals that send more guys out than the Celtics are taking in because they've got too many guys. While putting out the message like, we still like our guys, so we're not just going to give them away, but the Celtics are definitely at a position now where they are through with the quote-unquote depth. They need to get guys out of here and upgrade those two players with one player that can do the job. So, and of course, this has sparked the Twitter explosion of trade questions. So Ryan asks, other than David Lee, who's the most likely player or players to be moved near the deadline? Rory, which Celtic is most likely to be traded within a week? Justin, I know everyone is freaking out and everybody wants a trade, but who's in the market? Who will we trade and get in a deal? Just a few of the Twitter questions that we've gotten and the ones that exist out there. So let's just start saying this. It's incredibly hard to make a deal in this NBA climate. You look at the standings. Look at the East. Everybody in the East is in the hunt for the most part. Minus Philly, Brooklyn. Who else? The Knicks. Everyone else is basically in the hunt. Out West, most teams are still in it. And the teams that are struggling a little bit are not in a position to start selling. So I question who's really going to be on the market. When we're asked who's out there to be traded, not many guys at all. So Danny Ainge has got a hell of a job here because he wants to be a buyer. He wants to bring in good talent and trade away a couple of guys to bring in that good talent. I don't know how he's going to do it. Even though we have the assets, I think the Celtics' assets are better served in a bigger trade for the star player and a collection, much like the Kevin Garnett deal, a collection of draft picks that are very attractive and a bunch of young players who could be used to build around that big-time draft pick. I don't know. The trade market's going to be really interesting, Jay. I don't know who's really selling. And fans want to say, just go get this guy. Just go get Nerlens Noel. Just go get Boogie Cousins. They're not up. They're not up for sale. They're not being shopped around. You can't just go get guys. So Danny Ainge has a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Their depth has clearly become a bit of an issue. And it kind of promised to from the start, just because they had so many guys that are capable of playing. And especially in the front court where you have the five big guys. Now, David Lee said a lot of the right things the other night after his second consecutive DNP. He's clearly frustrated with his role. When he was asked about possibly requesting a trade, he didn't dismiss it like it's crazy. He kind of said, like, yeah, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I know I can still play. So he's frustrated. You've got a lot of guys, theoretically, probably believe they should be playing more minutes. Kelly Olynyk being one of them. Jared Sullinger is now coming off the bench. He started for a long time. You've got Jordan Mickey, who won D-League Player of the Month. They want to see what's up with him, but they have nowhere to put him in the NBA rotation. So that depth, it's kind of become a little bit of an issue. And players have complained about the rotation, the lack of a set rotation. And, you know, there aren't a lot of teams that have truly set rotations. But the fact that players are complaining about it says that, that's something that bothers them. And this having all the depth has been tough. Now, as you said, what are they going to trade? Are they going to trade Jarrett Selinger, a guy who's going to be a restricted free agent? Are they going to trade David Lee, who has a $15.5 million contract, which might work better as part of that deal near the trade deadline for a potential star who shakes free? They kind of need that money for the possibility of a big trade. So what do they do to alleviate this issue? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what Angel do. I don't know who's available. And that's the issue here, is that they need to make moves. And I've compared this, the depth thing, before to last season, last January, when it was after the Rondo trade and they still had Brandon Wright, they had Jameer Nelson. Guys were grumbling about playing time. It was easy to flip Brandon Wright at that time because he was a pretty young guy with still with value, and he didn't fit into the team's long-term future. It was easy to flip Jameer Nelson because he was a veteran who still had value. David Lee doesn't have value. He's tough to flip. The other guys are young and could be part of your future. It's tough to give up on those guys. So it's not as easy a fix as it was this time last season when Ainge made a couple trades that really, I thought, helped push them forward, because all of a sudden guys that didn't know their roles had more set, they had more of a knowledge each night what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, Selinger goes down. You have the birth of the small lineup that really changed everything for the Celtics last year. So I just went on a rant.
Yes.
Like, I'm rambling right now. But the point is, there's no easy fix to the depth problem. And I don't think there's like any obvious guy to move or guys to move to make that upgrade and to consolidate that talent.
So scanning the NBA landscape, I think one guy, let's just pretend like the Celtics had an interest in this. And I don't know if they do or think that they do, but so Markieff Morris is probably at the top of the list of guys that have talent that are most likely to be traded.
I assume he's one of the most available guys.
Yeah.
In the NBA.
He's a talented guy. Last year, he was one of Phoenix's best players. They traded his brother, and now he's all pissed off. So now he's on the market. Phoenix is terrible. He is absolutely available. Well, and he's got a good contract. He's like, what, $8 million or so? So if he's available, a lot of teams would be interested in potentially getting him, especially if Phoenix is sitting there saying, we want to get rid of this headache.
I don't know how many teams would be interested in him, to be honest, at this point, after he's completely torpedoed just because his brother was traded. That, and the way he's done it, throwing a towel at his coach, like, he has completely murdered whatever was left of his trade value. Absolutely murdered it. That guy is
right.
Has shown himself as an issue.
But let's just say that I agree. I'm not saying that I'm advocating for this. But if Markieff Morris is available, and there are teams that are interested in his services, and you say, well, Team A has a trade exception, and they will take him, they will absorb him. And Team B says, well, don't give him the trade exception. We'll give you, you know, a little something. And Team C says, well, we'll give you a player. What I'm saying is, there are so many teams right now that are good that could use a player of his talent. And if his anger is strictly towards the Phoenix Suns, and he leaves the Phoenix Suns, and he's now just away from the team that traded him, traded away his brother. If he becomes a good player for your team and you're convinced that he's going to be a good player for your team, there are so many teams that are vying for a good player's services that it drives up his value. And if it's not Markieff Morris, it's another player. And let's pretend it's even DeMarcus Cousins. Let's say DeMarcus Cousins is on the market, which I can tell you he is not. There is no way he's on the market right now. The Sacramento Kings are even close to a playoff spot. They're not.
They're half a game out.
They could be a playoff team. So there's no way that they're going to trade Boogie Cousins. But again, hypothetically, when people say, go get Boogie. Okay. Well, if Boogie does hit the market, how many teams are going to be vying for his services? You're going to have to give up a premium. And maybe the Celtics have the picks, but do you give up everything for Boogie Cousins? The value is going to be sky high. There are too many buyers, not enough sellers, and that's going to drive up the market, and that's going to make things difficult. Any player that's out there that has interest from a couple of teams is going to be – he's going to require more than you think to get him, because there aren't going to be that many guys out on the market when it comes time to make a trade. That's just how it is. How many teams – look at the standings. How many teams do you honestly think are going to be looking to move players?
Although it'll be interesting because there are other teams like the Grizzlies. Like, their window's – it's done, right?
I would say that there's no way.
Their window's probably done.
No, they're done.
Yeah, so what are they going to do? The Rockets, like – do they think their window is still open? What are they going to do? The Jazz, like, they're young. Like, there are a lot of teams.
Jazz aren't trading anybody.
Yeah, probably not. But there are a lot of teams that are in that playoff hunt but are also on the way down. And what are they going to do entering the trade deadline? It's a weird, weird market, I think, right now. Just because the West has like four good teams. I mean, Dallas is okay. Memphis is okay. Houston's okay. Utah's okay. So I would say four good teams in the West. You've got like 12 mediocre teams in the East. What does everybody do? I don't know. I don't know what everybody's going to do. I know Danny Ainge wants to upgrade. And beyond that, this trade market is going to be weird. And also, there's looking forward, it's like there might be even more buyers because this isn't a good free agency market. And on top of that, everybody has free agency money because of the new TV deal. So it's a tough free agent market. It might be a tough trade market. And Ainge has all the assets. All the draft picks, but the market could be a little weird right now.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting because, I mean, it may be as simple as letting Jared Sullinger walk. Maybe it's just that simple. Maybe depending on the draft picks, you sit there and you say, "Look, I like Sullinger. He does a lot of good things, but if you're trying to move forward, and say." How are we going to build this team? Does letting your restricted free agents, if Jared Sullinger gets a decent offer sheet from somebody, do you just sit there and say, I'm not going to match? And you just say, Jordan Mickey, if they believe in Mickey, and if these results from the D-League are real and not just pumped up D-League results, then do you sit there and say, it's better to let our restricted free agents, which would be Sullinger and Zeller, just let those two guys walk and take their money. If they get a good offer sheet, 8, 9, 10 million somewhere else, congratulations, guys. Good luck with your new teams. And say, Jordan Mickey, we believe in you. You're going to get the minutes next year. And let's just roll with him. And you get Mickey and Olynyk and whatever other maybe you go out and sign a Ryan Anderson and you have another stretch big out there and you go that direction. So that might be, when you talk about consolidating the roster, that might be how they do it. Let a couple of guys go, give Mickey a shot, go after one of those guys. I keep bringing up Ryan Anderson and Teletovich, two guys that could be stretch bigs, fit the system, kind of go in. They give you another option. Even with Jerebko here, still he's under contract for another year. So you have other options for your small lineups. Obviously, Crowder gets into the mix with the small lineups. I don't know. Maybe it's just that, and the trade market just doesn't materialize right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what Ainge can shake up, because this team needs something. The defense is fantastic. The offense just isn't even close to passable. And if they could just whip up, we've said this so many times, if they could just whip up an average offense, they would be a very good team. Yep. But they can't. And it's gotten worse lately. And they need Avery Bradley. And they need trades. And
they need a lot.
By the way, people might like, I watched Ben Simmons for the second time the other night against Kentucky. That dude is good.
Yeah.
That dude is really, really good. I love watching him play.
Yeah.
He is fun. He's 6'10", athletic. Doesn't need the ball either. Like, he can make an impact on the game without having the ball in his hands. Great passer, like next level passer.
Yeah.
Fun to watch.
He's going to be a good player. No
there doubt. There are a few guys, I think, who will be good players from that draft. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be a good draft. I mean,
yeah.
I think if you land in the top five, you'll be fine.
It's been described to me as like the Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker draft.
Uh-huh. Well, that was a good draft. So
yeah, not a bad draft.
I like where the Celtics are positioned. Before we get to the Twitter questions, we should mention Brad Stevens, who did a very admirable thing it was just a natural thing. The visiting Andrew Smith, taking the game off last night to visit a very, very sick former player who is really struggling, battling with cancer. He didn't do it to send a message to anybody. He did it because this is who he is. Because he truly believes, when he says family first, and this kid is a member of his extended family, a former player that he loves, he did it because this is what he believes. And the message and the impact and what it does to the Celtics is completely secondary to hopefully Smith getting better. But the message sent is so clear. And inspirational, and I think it helps bring the team together when they see him practice what he preaches, to say basketball is obviously our jobs and it's very important, but this is real life, this is humanity, this is something that's very important to me, and I'm going to go do this because this is more important than one game in one season. So I don't know what else to say about it other than it was a very amazing thing for him to do, important thing for him to do, and I'm sure he did it without even thinking. He was definitely going to do it no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't even a question. As soon as he knew, apparently sounds like Smith is really sick right now, which is terrible. Thoughts go out to him. Prayers go out to him. Hopefully he gets – his wife was asking for a miracle on Twitter. Hopefully he gets it. As soon as Stevens knew, he was gone. Like it didn't matter to him that the Celtics had a game. That's inconsequential. And everybody should think like that. Everybody should think, you know, this guy I coached for 4 years, I need to be there with him during his time of need. That should always, always, always be the – priority. And as I'm talking about this, I just saw a tweet from Ronald Norred, who played for Stevens at Butler and who was an assistant coach for the Celtics under Stevens. He tweeted, two people I go to bed thankful for tonight. Brad Stevens, my coach, and Andrew Smith, my teammate. Love those dudes. They inspire me.
Wow.
Stevens just gets it.
Yeah.
He knows that there are things that are a lot more important than basketball. And he knows that this journey isn't about 24% three-point shooting or the wins you get, the losses you get. It's about the relationships you build with the people in that locker room. And to hear the Celtics players talk about him last night after he'd left the team to go, they understand he's special. They understand he's different than a lot of coaches. And Evan Turner said he puts him on a high pedestal. And those guys know they're lucky to be playing for a coach that really values and doesn't just talk about it. He is about it. He's that guy who talks about all the right things, and then the second his former player needed him, hopped on a flight to go visit him. And as sad as you are for Andrew Smith, it's uplifting that there are people who will shove aside whatever they need to do to go help the people that they love.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's very easy for people to sniff out bullshit, and there's none of that with Brad Stevens. And the second that any of that is detected from somebody, then your entire message falls apart. And that it's like you said, Brad Stevens is genuine. He is himself. And I think at this level, to get through to guys who, you know, live this multimillionaire lifestyle, who, you know, are surrounded by yes men and hangers on. When you sit there and you're just legitimate and you practice what you preach, you get a level of respect because these guys don't normally see that. So, yeah. All right, we're going to move on to the Twitter questions and get back to basketball. A few Twitter questions before we go. Alex asked, did Bobby Portis strike you as a guy the Celtics missed while watching him last night? I mean, he's doing well, but I don't think we can make that judgment for another few years, because I know when the Rozier pick came up last June, we expected it to be Portis. He was the guy that was in all the mock drafts. But look, the Celtics made their choice, and there's no way in hell that I'm going to make a determination on whether we hit or missed on a guy this soon. It's not like Bobby Portis is going to go out there and win Rookie of the Year. So unless he was going out there and dominating and having a Magic Johnson rookie season, there's doesn't matter that Rozier isn't playing and Portis is, and Portis is on a good team. It just matters down the road. In 2 or 3 years, if Rozier never pans out and Portis becomes a good rotation player or better, then yeah, we can make that determination. But I think it is way too early to it's like asking me what kind of day it was at sunrise. It's just way too early to figure that out.
Yeah, and if he were playing for the Celtics, he'd probably be like Jordan Mickey.
Right.
Who is in the D League right now and is out of the rotation. So, yeah, I like Portis's game. I like his energy. I like his potential. As you said, it's way too early to think that they missed on him, especially when we have no clue what Terry Rozier will be. Absolutely no idea what Terry Rozier will be. He's a guy with a lot of talent, a lot of physical attributes that really good point guards have. So we have to see what Portis does in the future. We have to see what Rozier does. This year was always going to be a lot of D-League time for the Celtics rookies. And so we'll know a lot more in the future. That can't be determined yet.
Alexander asks, realistically, at best, are we a playoff spoiler? If not, are expectations too high? P.S., can we please send three power forwards to Philadelphia for Noel? Let's get on that. Let's see what they're thinking on that. No, Noel is not getting traded. I still stick to what I said before. I've been saying this all along. The Celtics will win a first round series and probably lose in the second round. That's what I've been thinking. I think that's probably going to hold true. Yeah, I think it obviously all depends on health. That's really where it boils down. If the Celtics can stay healthy, if they can go into a playoff series fully healthy, then they can beat, unless they're the eighth seed taking on Cleveland. If they go in there at a 5-6 or anything higher than a 6, I think they can win that first round series.
Yeah, and who knows what they'll look like. I mean, we still have the trade deadline to get through. And Ainge is talking about upgrading the roster. And he's not just looking, as he said, for that big deal. He's looking for upgrades. So if he gets upgrades and they find a little more scoring, then I think they'll have a chance against any non-Cleveland team in the East.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ridiculous. I don't think there's any – I'm not sure there's any great team in the East. Cleveland might be now with Kyrie back. I still have to see it. They have that potential. Other than that, there's no great team in the East. Everybody's pretty good. Nobody's
great. Chicago's starting to separate themselves as the number two, I think.
Yeah.
But not a great team, but a pretty good team. And I think Cleveland is going to be the great team. Chicago is going to be the clear number two when all is said and done. And then after that, it's going to be a big jumbled mess.
Yeah.
And we talked about Jordan Mickey, but I want to get Jack Bailey's question in. Is Jordan Mickey going to be turn out to be a huge steal, or is the D-League a bad measuring stick? And I just want to say that the D-League is a horrible measuring stick.
Especially for big guys. Like, there are no good big men in the D-League, because if you are 6'10 or taller, chances are you are playing for an NBA. 6'10 or taller and any good, chances are you are on an NBA roster. Yeah.
Or getting paid a lot of money overseas. If you're 6'10 and any good but still not able to crack an NBA roster, you're making a ton of money overseas somewhere. But that said, I think that Jordan Mickey is going to be a contributor on this team. I like his development. I like that he's turned into a three-point shooter. That is – maybe I shouldn't put it that way. But he's turned into a guy who can take and make some threes, and hopefully that translates to the NBA level. But, you know, God, so many guys dominate in the D League and never materialize. And guys like Shelvin Mack have awesome D League careers and are journeymen in the NBA, you know, or okay players, role players. So it's hard to sit here and say Jordan Mickey's D-League success is definitely going to translate to NBA success. 1 + 1 does not equal 2 here. However, he is dominating the D-League, which is a whole lot better than not dominating the D-League. Because if he wasn't, then he'd be screwed. Then he's screwed. If you go to the D-League and you have any hopes of being in the NBA and you don't play well there, you got problems. So
yeah.
The fact that he's going down there and at least dominating really bad talent at least gives you the idea that, okay, he's got the at least potential to do something, become something of some significance for the Celtics, meaning that he'll at least maybe become a guy who earns rotation minutes. I don't know how good he's going to get, but I have obviously high hopes, but yeah, you can't ever fall into the trap that D-League success equals NBA success, because that is not the case.
Yeah, and they're really, the Celtics are really excited, and this, I think, separates him from, say, Fab Melo, who went down and tore up the D-League. They're really excited about his work ethic and his professionalism, which is a big deal for a guy who has talent and skill and already blocks shots and can guard multiple positions. That work ethic goes a long way toward helping you reach whatever you'll become in your NBA career. I texted today with a scout who's at the D-League showcase about Mickey, and I asked him his thoughts on Mickey. He said, obviously one of the two or three best big men in the D-League. He said, I like him a lot more now than I did around draft time. He said, I wish he was 2 inches taller because he's probably a five and not a four. So that sounds pretty fair assessment.
Yeah.
He's doing well. He's improving. I think that Brad Stevens has said he's really curious to see what Mickey can do. I am too. I want to see what he's got. The numbers he's putting up, the shot block. He had a ridiculous shot block in their game Thursday at the D-League showcase. He went up to block a shot with his left hand. The guy did a reverse layup to the other side. And he just kind of spun around and swatted it with the right hand.
That's ridiculous.
It was absurd. Very few guys can make that play. His offensive game is coming along. We'll see. We'll see what he has. We'll see what they have there. It'll be interesting to – I don't know if they know what they have. I know they're excited about him. I know there's hope that he can at least be a rotation big guy in the future. But I don't think anyone can really know what they have just by the D-League.
No.
Everybody goes down there and just crushes it down there.
Yeah. It's funny. I was listening to the Low Post podcast today with Zach Lowe, and he had Brian Windhorst on. And Windhorst made a good point. He goes, go to that D-League showcase. Look at the resumes of the guys in the D-League showcase, the guys who can't crack the NBA. Look at how many guys came out of high school as can't-miss prospects, guys who came into the draft who at some point were rated very highly and were supposed to be impact NBA players. Guys like Terry Jones, who briefly was with the Celtics, but when he came out and in his first summer league, he was the guy that tantalizing talent. I bring it up because you mentioned Mickey's work ethic, and that's the separation between the talents turning into something and talent not turning into something. And I always like to say that the worst guy in the NBA who can never crack a minute of NBA time would walk into your men's league and drop 100 points without even blinking. Because the worst player in the NBA is...
Not if I were guarding him, John.
No, that's true.
He'd have 200.
200. How are we going to make the same joke at the same time? Those guys are so good. They are... The worst player in the NBA is an amazing basketball player. That just goes to show you how amazing the really good players really are. So these guys in the D-League guys could come in and dominate. You'd sit there and say, oh, this guy sucks. You'd see him, if you saw him out playing and you didn't know who he was, you'd wonder why he wasn't in the NBA. They're really good, but they don't have the work ethic. They don't have that thing inside them that makes them improve. And another podcast I was listening to was Isaiah Thomas on the Woj podcast, The Vertical. And this is the difference, that mentality. He says, every summer, I go out trying to add one more thing to my game. And last summer, it was that one-footed floater. And a lot of guys in the NBA, you hear that. They have that thing. I want to add something to my game every year. I want to do something better every year. Not everybody has that mentality. Not everybody goes into every game watching game film, having studied their opponent. That's the difference. That drive is the difference between turning your talent into something better or resting on your laurels and then falling off and just being some guy that used to be good at basketball. So to hear that Jordan Mickey's work ethic is something that they're excited about, that's a very encouraging sign. So we're going to wrap it up. But before we do, on that note, just want to mention Jordan Crawford dropped 72 points in a Chinese League game.
72 points.
And they lost.
Who cares? I'm sure he didn't care. He was like, yeah, I got my 72. I got my 72.
72 points. I actually got asked the question today. with the Celtics struggling, this they got to at least look at Jordan Crawford, right? Nope. Nope.
I would be in favor of a Jordan Crawford
signing.
Oh,
my God.
Just to relive those glory days. Remember how glorious he was?
That one week was amazing. He was passing like crazy. He was a point guard.
And I remember at Madison Square Garden, he'd hit like 4 threes in a row, took a fifth one, didn't even wait for it to go in. Was already running back on defense. He knew it was in. That was my favorite Jordan Crawford moment of them all, because it was like when Nick Young was celebrating the three and it missed. Jordan Crawford did not miss. Jordan Crawford knew that thing was cash, and he turned around, sprinted back on defense. Probably the only time he ever sprinted back on defense his entire career. And he was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week and was out of the NBA like 6 months later.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Shaky. That dude plays like he just chugged two carafes of coffee before every game. I love it. All right. Well,
miss Jordan Crawford.
Jordan Crawford, Mr. 72 points. All right. We're going to wrap it up. We'll hopefully be back with some better news in a week. If not, well, we'll just sit here and bitch and moan for another hour. For Jay King, I'm John Corrales. We'll see you next week on the Raining Jays podcast.